Welcome to Keeping 100 Radio. I'm your host, Lissy Pointer, type 1 diabetic, certified health coach, personal trainer, and founder of Needles and Spoons Health and Wellness. Inside this podcast, you'll find the real and raw conversations around diabetes management, including the lessons that we don't learn in our endo's office, my best tips and trainings, and conversations from the experts that I trust inside the community so that you can create more predictability in your diabetes management and feel empowered while doing so. Let's dive in.
Hey, hey, welcome to the Keeping It 100 radio segment, Empowered Voices. I'm Valeria Garcia, certified health coach, type 1 diabetic, women's wellness coach and mentor inside Needles and Spoons, and alumni of our signature program, Keeping It 100. Inside this segment, I hold space and interview individuals, leaders, and supporters from the T1D community to share their story, journey, experiences, and wisdom to empower, inspire, and share their light. To find these conversations live, join us inside the T1D Judgment Free Zone Facebook group.
Okay. Hello, everyone. We're so excited to have another episode of Empowered Voices. I am Val, and today I'm so excited to have a friend on today. Her name is Mare Fraser, and she actually had joined us on episode 97 to talk all about how she prepared for the adventure team trek with Connected in Motion. So if you haven't heard about Connected in Motion, they have an adventure team, they have an application process, and it's this team that goes out to raise money. They come together to do something big, like a big trek. For some of them, they may have done it before. For some, it might be the first time they've ever done something like that. So go check out that episode so you can hear how Mare prepared. And then today we're going to talk about how it all went down and what happened, what were the moments, what it went like. So yeah, Mare, if you want to kind of just tell us a little bit about you and again, remind us what inspired you to jump in and do something like this.
Sure. Thanks, Val. I have been type 1 now for 7 and a little bit years. And, you know, I have been involved in, you know, exercise in the outdoors, but I hadn't really taken up anything like a big trek or anything like that before. I've been camping when I was younger. And then I became connected in motion through one of their Slipstream events, which is like a grown-up diabetes camp, which was awesome. And it just rekindled in me that love of the outdoors. I saw some folks who had been members of the adventure team before speaking at one of the sessions. I thought that was so cool, but I wasn't sure like if I could do something like that. I'm an everyday human. I'm not out mountaineering. I'm not doing all the things, conquering, overcoming, all those kinds of narratives. I'm just a human who, you know, goes to the occasional hike. And I had been a fairly couch-oriented human. But I thought, you know what? As I've said before, I think like, how am I supposed to know what future Mare can do? I haven't met her yet. So I thought I would just apply and see what happened. And I'm really grateful that someone, you know, the panel that adjudicates the applications received and thought, hey, maybe this human should join the effort and gave me a chance to become a trekker. It was awesome.
That is so cool. I got chills. I love that. And I love how just that point of like your future self, right? We don't know if we don't like put ourselves in those moments that may be uncomfortable, right? Like you might see the application come through and think, whoa, this is scary. Or, hey, I've never tried it. Might as well try it out. And that can be like a new thing I'm adding on to my experiences of life. So I think that's great. Yeah. Okay. So remind me how long you were like preparing, like the months before. What did that, like, how long was that? Like just the prepping.
Yeah, it's a fairly long arc. So I had originally been accepted to the team before COVID. So I had started training way back when, and then that trek was put on hold because of COVID. And so there was a period of time where there was sort of not trekking happening. So when I, you know, had the opportunity to become part of an active team again, I would say probably under a year, I don't know, 10 months or so, I started to do some preparation and really it was the first time again I had prepared for something like this. I've run a half marathon, but that was before I was diagnosed with type 1. I've done some occasional hiking, as you mentioned, sort of day hikes, that kind of thing, but nothing in the backcountry, nothing for an extended period of time. And I live in a very flat place. So the idea of tackling mountains and trying to sort of get a sense of what that could be like and train for that when, again, I live in an area where we're not very close to mountains of any size, was something that I was sort of feeling challenged about, but I just tried to get creative and used what I could, you know, hills, stairs, whatever was possible.
Yeah, I know. I remember you saying you're wearing your backpack on the stairs at work.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. And okay, so the trail, let us know how many miles, if you know it, was it? And this was in Wyoming, right? This trail, the tent trail. Okay.
Yeah. So it was in Wyoming. I think it worked out to just over 50 some odd miles. I work in the world of kilometers. So it was 60 plus kilometers over the course of 5 days. So 4 nights, 5 days, and then some time, a couple days ahead of time to get ready, get all our food together, do all the things. And then a couple days on the other end just to sort of prepare to re-engage with life, get back into community and, you know, be regular humans. Like shower.
You're like, oh yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah.
So for the 2023 team, how many of you were there?
The team was 10 folks, 10 trekkers and 2 guides. So 12 of us total, and all of us living with type 1. Some for longer than I've been on the planet, some diagnosed within the last year. It really ran the gamut. We ranged in age from like folks in their 20s to folks in their 70s, like it was a super diverse group across lots of different dimensions.
Yeah. And was that the day you guys like showed up to prepare for the trek? Was that the first time you guys met each other?
Yeah. Some folks live a bit closer, so a couple of people were able to connect earlier. But really, I think for the most part, that was the first time. And it was so much fun. You know, Connected in Motion, the team and the guides coordinate calls, some planning calls ahead of time a few months out. So we've been talking about gear. We've been talking about training. We'd been connecting that way. We'd been connecting through socials. But to actually meet in person was just so much fun. You know, it's like folks you feel like you already know, but the chance to actually be in the same place at the same time was really exciting.
Oh yeah. I think meeting in person is the best.
Yeah.
I went to my first Slipstream this year, and I think it was happening at the same time that you were on the track. Yeah. And I loved it. I was like, oh my gosh, this is so fun. Just, I had never been around. I mean, most of the people I've met in the diabetes space are like online, right? Like through Instagram or like webinars or Zoom calls. But to be around them in person, oh, it's like nothing beats that. It's just, yeah, like you said, it's like all these automatic best friends and you can just feel so connected so quickly. Mm-hmm. So I love that. And that's how you want to feel going into this type of adventure.
For sure.
Like everything's the unknown. So at least you all have that commonality of like, okay, we're all managing our diabetes together. We've all got snacks. Like, we are prepared and we've been talking about it, so we're ready. Okay, walk us through like your headspace, like day one, like you get there, you got your shoes on, you're like, we're doing it.
We're ready to roll. So the way our trek started was that there's a big gondola that can take you up to the top of Rendezvous Mountain. So that's how our trek started. And so it was actually pretty funny because right off the bat, it's a gondola that holds maybe 20 people. And we're all beeping, you know, all our devices are going off and stuff. And we hear somebody ask, like, is somebody here living with diabetes? And we're all like, yeah. So we ended up sharing the gondola with like a diabetes nurse and an endo.
Oh my God.
Just by chance, which is really funny. So we had a chance to talk about what we were up to. And they, you know, we got pictures with them. And as we were all getting off the gondola, they were like, don't forget your low snacks. Don't forget to set your alarms. It was really cute. So that was kind of a fun way to get things started. And there's actually a Waffle House at the top of the mountain. So we started by eating all the delicious things, as any human would. And then we set off. And it was windy. It had started raining a little bit. It was overcast. And so the first day was our shortest day. I think it was just, I don't want to say 7K, not very many kilometers or miles. But definitely just getting used to things, being at altitude. That was new again, coming from a flat place near sea level. And just getting adjusted to the packs and things like that. So, you know, we moved at a pace that worked for us on that first day, just adjusting to the process, and then going on from there. We set up camp just as we were arriving at camp, like the sky, it totally unleashed. It was such a downpour. We were a little ways out. Yeah, we crowded under this tree, which was hilarious, but really did nothing. Like it was just a total deluge. And it's good for bonding. I may have trauma, like I have an emotional support raincoat that I have to. But, you know, these things are navigable. They're part of the experience. And so once it let up a little bit, we carried on and we set up camp kind of in the rain. And it was pretty late, sort of bordering on dark. And so we had some dinner, we had some chili and went to bed to try and get well rested for day two. So the lead-in was, you know, dramatic, as one would expect. It ranged from delicious waffles to healthcare professionals in the gondola to rainstorms.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's so wild. Yep, you got your raincoat now. You're like, I feel like after that, you're kind of like, okay, now anything that happens, like, we got this, because this was like wild. Oh my gosh. Okay. So now you're going into day two. Was that just like a longer day, like you're hiking longer, like more miles, kilometers?
Yeah, it was a longer day. We started off with some sun, which was awesome. It was also special because it was my birthday. So it felt really exciting to be out in the backcountry and taking on something like this with such amazing humans and challenging myself and trying something new to welcome a new year. So that was exciting for me. One of my teammates brought temporary tattoos with like glittery unicorns and all the things. So that was pretty fun. We all had tattoos, and one of my teammates also brought like a pour over coffee. So I had a fancy trail coffee for my birthday. So that set a really good tone for day two. I feel like it was a pretty fun tone. We packed up, we headed out. It was sunny. We walked through beautiful meadows with tons of wildflowers and, you know, the alpine trees. And to be honest, Val, because I haven't spent time in mountains, a lot of the time it felt really surreal. You know, there was a disconnect for me a bit because it's like, this is something I've always seen like on TV or in movies, or, but I wasn't the person doing it. So throughout the whole trek, I think my brain was trying to calibrate itself to like, no, you're actually here doing this thing versus like, this is a thing you watch. This is a thing other people do. And trying to bring those two things into alignment.
Oh, that's awesome. I feel like that's such like a spiritual spot to be in too, of just like, you can't be more connected to nature than that, right? You're like living there, you're sleeping there, you're in a new environment. Like, oh, how special. I love that. And I love that this was all happening, like you said, like you're welcoming in a new year, it's your birthday, you're making all these new friends. I love it. I love that. So, okay, now that you've like been like 2 days in, like what were things that were going well, like what was supporting your headspace or like you physically, emotionally, like what were the things that you maybe, like you said, you kind of have to expect the unexpected, right? There's going to be things that happen that maybe you were planning for all these other things to happen. And then something else comes up, like the rain, right? You're like, good thing I had a jacket. Cause imagine like, that's the one thing you forgot. And it's like pouring rain. You're like, okay, great.
Exactly. And it continued to pour. It was an ongoing trend, but we also had beautiful weather. I think things that were really helpful around that time were obviously that I would say obviously the team, the humans I got to be with were amazing. And, you know, if any of us were low or high or whatever, we had, I don't even know how many hundreds of years probably of experience to draw on. People know what that feels like. They might not know exactly what it feels like in your body, but they sure have a sense of what it feels like in their own body. So it never felt burdensome or things to, you know, take a break or do any of that. It's just part of our language as folks living with type one as community, right? And that solidarity felt really helpful. I think for me personally, I did feel the altitude the first few days in terms of my breathing, definitely. And I did start to think, or I had to stop myself from getting into the spiral of, oh, if I'm having this much challenge breathing and we're not really tackling the big elevation gains yet, I'm going to be in trouble. So it was for me, it was a matter of just taking everything one step at a time, not getting too far ahead of myself, and just being gentle. Like, bodies need time to acclimate to new things. And just trying not to, you know, push myself beyond what was needed. You know, it's obviously going to be a push. It's a hard physical feat, but, you know, to really not overtax, and also to, you know, do my part, hopefully as part of the team, and feel like I'm, you know, contributing in good ways. You know, and also just give it time, exercise patience, you know, and see, and try not to predict or anticipate how things will unfold, but just let them unfold and see how they go. A surprise for me in terms of diabetes stuff was, because during my, well, for context, during all my training, I would tend to drop low. And when I was on trail, I actually ran high almost the entire time, which was the complete opposite of what I expected. And there were definitely folks on the team who ran low. I was not one of them. I'm not sure if it was the altitude. I'm not sure. At first, I thought maybe it was adrenaline, like new things, really exciting. Maybe it's like the emotional piece. But that definitely was a trend for me throughout the whole trek, and something I didn't expect. So just to navigate that and getting comfortable with running a bit higher than I was used to. And I remember my team before I left, because I was checking in with my nurses and things, and they said, you know, for something like this, it's, you know, try to get comfortable with running yourself a bit higher. You know, you need a cushion. You're going to have more variability, which I definitely did. I was like, wait till you see my graphs when I came back. But, you know, low should be the exception if you can swing that. And so I just tried to keep that in mind, because running on the higher side is the more challenging part of my comfort zone. And also part of why I took this on is to navigate these kinds of things, right? So that was something that I contended with as well.
Yeah, I love that. And you're so right. There's so many variables, right? And so much is like outside of your normal routine or your normal day to day, right? Like you're in a different state, different weather. Like you said, the altitude, I think the altitude has such a big, I mean, even when I was in Colorado from California, like my blood sugars were responding differently and I could tell right away. And I also was struggling to breathe. I didn't think I was going to. And I was like, oh yeah, you can really feel it, you know, and it does take some time. Yeah. And I think that's such a good way to frame it too, of like getting comfortable with being uncomfortable, right? Like if my numbers are, you know, outside of range of where I usually feel comfortable, like what does that look like? What are my next steps? Like, how do I go through the mindset of like, my goals here aren't to like, right, zoom in a bunch, right? Like, I'm not trying to have perfect numbers. I'm not trying to like work on my baselines. I'm not trying to do all these things perfect. I'm trying to kind of balance both of like, what's comfortable, uncomfortable, what's new, what am I navigating? And like, what am I learning, right? You're learning so much from doing something like this. Like you're learning like what it looks like for your body to be active so many days and how that impacts your blood sugars. You're looking at, you know, what foods are supporting your blood sugars? Like what are the snacks that actually helped you in those moments where you're having lows? Like I think doing something less gives you the most data, right? For next time or when you do something outside of your comfort zone. So I love it. I think this is like what everyone needs to hear when you go into something like this, right? Like things aren't going to be perfect, but that's okay. And that's part of it.
Totally. Yeah. Things are definitely not perfect. And again, blood sugar wise, it was 180. It was the total opposite of what I had experienced in training and what I was expecting. And so it's just, yeah, just about recalibrating, which we're all doing all the time, you know, living with type one. It's always, we're always shifting and there's the things we get used to. And then those really wild days were like, And as you said, so many factors acting at any given time. Is it like, am I dehydrated? Is it emotions? Is it stress? Is it, who knows, right? The list goes on, as we know.
Yeah. What would you say like set you up for the most success, like just managing like the diabetes, I guess, variable, if we want to say? We know there's multiple in there, but yeah, what made you feel most confident? Like, was it like having your snacks with you, like having people with you? Like, what made you feel like safe?
I think ahead of time preparation, just chatting with other folks, talking with other folks who'd been on trek, who really generously shared their insights and experiences. I'm just trying to learn as much as I could in the moment. The humans, you know, having that moral support, if you're really high or really low and you're just feeling awful, knowing you aren't alone is helpful, and not being alone. Snacks are always useful, just that security. I think we were weighing them. I think we averaged about 3 to 4 pounds of snacks each, like in terms of our bags. And I think that's a learning, you know, I hardly put a dent in them. Some folks, you know, ended up using a ton because again, blood sugars are doing what they're doing. So I think it was helpful to have a large amount of snacks just in terms of comfort and reassurance. And even though I could probably get away with having less, I'm not sure how helpful that would be. It would be lighter. And physically it would be helpful, but in terms of just being prepared and feeling like if something totally goes sideways, I've got extra. I think I'll always err on the side of more snacks.
Yeah.
If nothing else, it's variety and different kinds. Something that worked well was I had electrolyte tabs that were low carb, no carb, and I had some that were carby, and I had So I had water, and then I had two small sort of squishy bottles of each type of electrolyte running at any time. So I could adjust.
Oh, good.
You know, I could dose, micro dose carbs or not. While also taking an electrolyte. So things like that I found helpful too.
Oh, that's so smart. Yeah. What about, and then you had, I'm sure, like a lot of supplies too. Like you have your insulin, any other supplies you need. So it's so funny, you know, you think about, I always think about like anyone who goes trekking that doesn't have diabetes, right? Their bag is going to look completely different, right? Because I have been like outdoor rock climbing where my pump literally shattered the screen, like on the last part. It started raining. We lost our car. And I was just thinking, like, if we had to sleep out here in the wilderness, like, good thing I have all this food and I have my like backup supplies and I have a meter.
Sure.
Like, it's scary, you know, you just never know. So, mm-hmm. you know, at any moment, things can turn to another direction. So I like what you said of just being overprepared is actually what made you feel like most comfortable.
Yeah, backups on backups on backups. That sounds like quite a time. But I think that's true. And because there were, because we all live with type one, it was even that extra security of, you know, individually, we might not have had everything we needed, but as a group, we could cross supply if we needed to, if for any, you know, given reason, we ran out of something or didn't have something in a particular moment, that it was really likely that someone else would be able to like sort of step in with something to bridge a gap. So that was a superpower that we were able to have as a group of type one folks, which was really handy and awesome. But yeah, I think I learned some cool tips and tricks. One that has continued for me is one of my teammates pre-fills her cartridges for her pump. She uses a Tandem pump. Now, of course, obviously not medical advice. Everybody do what feels comfortable. Listen to your provider, all the things. But, you know, I felt comfortable, you know, doing this. And it's something that's persisted for me, which has actually helped sometimes with the feelings of burnout. You know, if I can fill a couple of cartridges and have them ready to go, it's a couple extra steps that I don't have to do every time I swap. And because I use steel cannulas, I'm swapping every 2 days, which mm-hmm. can sometimes feel like a whole lot. You know, having those pre-fills, you could always draw out insulin with a standard syringe if you need it that way. So that was just a fun
I actually did that like the other night. I know not medical advice, but yeah, it does make a difference, especially on like the trek that you're doing, like sitting there putting all the Tandem stuff, like switching, you know, like there's just so many pieces that if you can get ahead of it just with one extra step, it just, again, it's like that peace of mind, and it doesn't feel like that moment of like, oh, I have to do this again. It's more like, oh, we got this. I'm already prepared. It's going to take only like a few minutes. I love that. What other tips and tricks? I'm like,
I think I mentioned before, I might've mentioned in the last episode, but even just using a syringe to drain a blister. I didn't thankfully have blisters, but that's a handy tip, which I have actually used before in training and after. And it works really well. And we have syringes in abundance. Yeah. So I just had never thought to do that. It should have been obvious. I feel like they're sterile. We have them. Why not? But it hadn't occurred to me. So those are another little tip that I found really useful. But honestly, the depth of experience and knowledge just from the different settings on your pump, how to use them, like which ways to sort of tweak things. We could fill volumes of books and all of the internet with the learnings, to be honest, maybe is an experience. I don't know if with Slipstream, if you've felt similarly, but just again, so many people approaching things in different ways. And I know I didn't learn on this trip, but I learned through Slipstream. I had a friend who uses a pump for basal and who boluses with injection. And I hadn't heard about that before, like people using both at once. It's just always great to be exposed to different ways of being and doing, I think.
Oh, yeah. I think I was at the Slipstream also. I was doing something with my Tandem pump. And then I made a friend there who actually works at Tandem. She's like, oh, you know, you could do this. I forget what it was. I think I wasn't, you know, when you have the cartridge, she was like, oh, yeah, if you like take the air out of it first before you put the insulin in, it's like better because it brings the bag to the surface. She's all explaining it to me. And I was like, I feel like I knew that, but I forgot somewhere in the past 5 or 6 years.
Right.
So I'm like, thank you. But yeah, it's like those little things like that, right, where we get so in our routines and we're kind of like on autopilot with those type of things that being around other people, yeah, it just reminds you of like, oh yeah, there are other ways of doing it. And maybe I didn't see it. Something I learned out of Slipstream also was they were talking, it was more about like safety when you're like in the outdoors or like just different types of environments. But they were talking about glucagon, like the old style. And they were talking about like micro dosing, like say you're on a hike and you forgot your snacks. You can like micro dose that so that you can keep your blood sugars up. And that was something that I'm like, oh my God, in that moment, would I have thought of like micro dosing glucagon? Probably not. I've never used glucagon. So I was like, that's something I learned and made so much sense, you know? And it's so easy to just throw that in your backpack and be like, hey, if I eat these 20 snacks, at least I have this, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so cool. Wait, I had a question about, also the blister thing was crazy. I was like, I would have never, ever thought to do that. Just like drain my blister out. Okay. So awesome tips, tricks from everyone that you're meeting. Was there like a standout moment where you were like, whether it was like, whoa, I can't believe I'm here. I just did this, or just something like you said, there were so many moments I'm sure that you just can't plan for. And you're like, whoa, I did this. We're here. Any standouts for you?
Definitely. I think one was birthday oriented. The team made a surprise birthday cake. And it was gluten-free and it was vegan and it was made over a camp stove and it had sprinkles. And I was like, what is this magic? The fact that folks thought to do it and you have to, you know, different baking instructions outdoors at altitude, all of that was pretty special. And also carting the ingredients around was really generous. So I don't know if I'll have another birthday on a mountain. I hope so. But if not, this is pretty great. But one that's not so selfishly specific is, I would say, there, it was the third day. It was a really long day. It was beautiful. It was hot. It was sunny. We were trucking along, doing our thing. It was gorgeous. And we got to the top of what was eventually to become our tallest pass, Hurricane Pass, which was about 10,500 feet. And we learned that it came by its name, honestly. So we're halfway across the pass. We're above the tree line. There's like little scrubby plants, but nothing else. So you're totally exposed, of course. And we just see these clouds coming in. It's afternoon. It's been hot all day. So it's not weird that the weather would get gnarly. And it was like we were walking into the hellmouth. Like we could not see in front of us. It was like walking into this like cloud. It was pelting down rain. And as we were navigating that, you know, there was thunder and we were halfway across. So we needed to get off the pass. We either just had to go back or keep going. So we were just kept going. And then it started hailing.
Gosh.
Yeah, it was a time. And then it's like, I don't even know how long it was. You know, it's one of those things that felt really quick and really long all at once. It was really intense. And then it just lifted and there was a rainbow right there in front of us. And then the clouds cleared and you could see the Teton Range, all of the mountains and this rainbow. And we like,
that's like
I don't even have words. Like,
yeah, like what? That is so magical. Oh my gosh. I think it's like, it's just always that, you know, things can be difficult, things can be challenging, but there's always like the other side, right? Like, I feel like you guys were meant to go through that to like see something so beautiful and like so unique. And it's just you guys out there that are experiencing that. And what a special moment. That is 100% a standout moment. Oh my gosh.
It was pretty wild. And really that day we kept on going and we were trying to get to camp. And it ended up being a longer day than we had anticipated. And we actually hiked the distance of about a half marathon that day. And so we got in at dark. We're all tired. And one of the guides did a Shiro's duty and made, you know, a really great Korean. And we were so tired, we just all ate at the same pot, you know, like gathered around in the dark. And, you know, like what a day from a really sunny morning through this wild, you know, experience on top of the pass. And then sort of gathering together after, you know, exhausted, like physically just done. Yeah. And, you know, rolling into bed.
Just, oh my gosh. Okay. And so were there other people out there? Like, did you see other people on the trail?
For sure. We definitely did. Yeah. And at first it was sort of sparse, I'd say. We randomly ran into a cowboy. We ran into other people on horses. We crossed paths with a couple of the same hikers, sort of like crossing paths along the route, which was fun. We got to catch up here and there. And then on the last day, as we sort of got to the end of the trail, it was an area that's popular for day hikes. So we saw way, way more folks on that last day, which, you know, we'd expect. So we saw a few folks, but there were long stretches where it was just ourselves. We did see some wildlife. We saw moose. Oh. We saw marmot. We saw pika. They're so cute. Yeah.
That is so cool. Mm-hmm. Wow. I love it. I was like, I'm inspired. If you guys are listening, you're probably inspired too. I'm like, this is just such a unique experience, you know, mm-hmm. whether you're living with diabetes or not, just to do something like this. I think there's so much to learn, so much to experience. And yeah, it just like builds on like that strength in all areas, right? Like physically, mentally, like emotionally, of just like, what are these experiences? But also I think those connections that you're making with those people, those are also so unique, right? You're going through something together. You have diabetes together, but then you're also going through something new together. Very special. I love it. Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's really awesome. If you think of 12 humans with all the complexities of humans, so multiply that by 12, add, you know, chronic conditions, maybe type 1 alone, maybe other things in the mix, who knows, right? Layered on top, layers and layers and layers. You know, and we did the thing, you know, and yeah. It isn't to say things always work out. It isn't to say things don't happen, but it felt really great to navigate it all together. And everything that came up, we were able to manage in the moment in ways that kept us well and safe and good. And again, you know, taking on something entirely new, it was just really exciting. And it was, as you said, so much learning and such a confidence booster, just adding to that toolkit and that, you know, to draw on in day-to-day life. It's something that doesn't end when the trip is over. You know, you get to thankfully bring it with you.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. What about like, what were things that you're like, hey, if you're doing something like this, these are like the must-haves. Like if you did this all over again, what are like the top things that are like must-haves? Or if there's anything that you're like, ooh, I wish I had more of this, or I wish I would have packed this. Was there things that you kind of like reflected on now after the trip?
Great question. I was really happy in the end with what I brought. I definitely loved having that electrolyte, those options. I found that really handy. And for my management, my body, that worked really well. I had other snacks too, of course. I don't even know how many fruit snacks we ate over the time, like Clif Bars. I don't know what, like so many. Having different kinds of snacks, things that act more quickly, things that act more slowly, different sort of levels of or amounts of carbs. So you can kind of adjust to what you need, what you're doing as always. I really loved my trekking poles. I found them really helpful. Not everyone used trekking poles. Some folks were totally comfy and good without. I love them. They help me stay up. I'm a hunchy human. They help me stay upright and really supported my comfort. And my body actually hurt way less than I thought it was going to, which was shocking and awesome. As a pale human, I had a sun hoodie and I wore it the entire time. And for me, it's a must. It was really useful. I know it's kind of specific, but I really love them.
Sunblock in them?
Yeah, it's just the way the fabric is woven. Okay. And so they can serve as, they have like an SPF factor. Oh, yeah. So, and they're nice and, well, they come in different like thicknesses and stuff. And just instead of slopping on all the sunscreen all the time, which can get so gloopy after days and days and days, I still wore sunscreen, like on my face, obviously, but it just was helpful. I think, what else was useful? I brought, like, everyone had sort of luxury items. I brought a journal because that's how I roll. I like to write about my experiences and things like that. And practically speaking, I think, you know, I had a power bank to be able to charge my pump and phone and all of those things. So that was a necessary piece. But yeah, I think a comfortable pack, you know, is one that you've tried before and have tried with weight because it fits differently when it's fully weighted. I love my pack. It was really so comfy. Definitely a raincoat. We've been through that. A good one that you try to, you know, works. Even if it looks really cute and fun and nice out, it could change so quickly. We, you know, a hat, a beanie of some kind, something to stay warm, good socks. Mm-hmm. But I also am someone who likes for morale, like funny little things. So I brought beads, and many of us put like beaded our boots and stuff like that, just to bring a little bit of joy along. It was fun to have the temporary tattoos, which I didn't bring. But I just think those are good reminders of things that might feel frivolous, but if you're having a hard day or a rough time, it doesn't all have to be all business. And sometimes having some things to lighten the mood or just to take a break from the work of calibrating, recalibrating, thinking, you know, sort of strategizing can be really useful, or at least what worked for me.
Oh, I love that. That's great. Yeah. Because that's, yeah, like you said, even just having those tattoos, you're like, oh, I didn't think of that. But like, it brought you so much joy, right?
And yeah, it's super
fun. Yeah, like I remember as a kid putting tattoos everywhere. Like it was so fun. Like that is such a great idea. What about shoes? Did you just take like one pair of shoes? And also, I'm assuming you didn't shower unless you were in like a river. I was like, was there rivers? Like, did, like, was that a thing? Or like,
how did it all work?
Water? I'm just like having all these questions all of a sudden. I'm like, what about water? Like, did you run out of water? Like, I don't know. That's just a lot of like elements. I guess it depends where you're hiking.
For sure. So for shoes, we brought, I brought hiking boots and then camp shoes. So something like Crocs or Tevas or some kind of like cushy shoe. Personally, I just ended up wearing my hiking boots all the time, but pretty much everyone changed shoes. But I honestly was lazy and couldn't be bothered. I just get into camp and just was like, I'll just keep them on and I'm fine. I've worn them all day. So, you know, I had fairly sturdy, like heavyweight hiking boots. I know some folks like trail runners and things. I use trail runners or like a lighter hiking shoe most of the time, but I have weird ankles. So I thought for this kind of trip, I needed something more substantial. For water, we carried water filtration systems. So we would filter water from sources like streams and rivers as we went, and then have backup things like iodine tabs or whatever else, or a second set of filters. In terms of like showering and or like bathing and all the things, there were a few lakes and stuff, but just the flow of the trip, and timing and opportunity, there wasn't a ton of opportunities, but we did on the fourth day go to an alpine lake. It was so beautiful. So it was cold. Not everyone indulged, but I definitely went in the water. It was like, it was a dream. It's like those beautiful aqua lakes that you see on like, it's like a postcard or something like that. It's like,
oh my
I'm
God.
definitely
you're
swimming.
Like, I'm going in. Yeah. How could you not? That's like me. I went to Tahoe this year and it was so beautiful. It was freezing, but I was like, I have to go in. It's just so beautiful. I have to like touch it. Okay. Yeah. Awesome. I feel like, that was probably so fresh. So nice.
It was really, I love a good cold water dip. So it was really beautiful. But yeah, just as we go, you know, wipes, whatever you need to do on the go is sort of, we just managed as best we could with whatever was around. And it rained a fair amount. So we were getting regular showers in the afternoon.
You're like, my hair was wet 90% of the time.
Right. Oh, and then we do the thing where you're like hanging out your clothes so that they dry. And then I just remember one night, I think it was the second night, maybe we'd hung out some clothes to dry and things. And it was fine. It was sunny. We had a beautiful sunset. That's another standout moment, the sunset on day two. And I remember waking up probably about half an hour before we were getting up. And I just heard it and the rain had started. And by that time, it was like, you know, everyone's stuff was all wet again. It was just but then it cleared and things dried and we just did stuff like put things out as we were stopping for lunch or whatever and tried to maximize the sun time that we had. And it was all navigable. You know, it was sometimes uncomfortable, sometimes not the most ideal in terms of the rain situation, but that's going to happen. You're outside. So it's just about maximizing opportunities to do what you can do when you can do it in terms of getting things dry.
Yeah. Did anyone, this is a random question. Did anyone like lose toenails? I know people like lose their toenails when they do things like that.
I don't know. That's a good question. I'll have to put an ask out to the crew. Not that I know of, but it could have happened. I'm not sure. All my toenails are intact. Although I did get a purple toenail in a subsequent hike. My shiniest human and I went on a hike, a 25K hike, a couple weeks after I got back, and it was in a one day. So I got a purple toenail that day.
Yeah. But it's still you're like, passed. We're doing it in one day, baby. Oh my gosh. Yeah, this is like so helpful. Is there any other moments that you want to share or like advice that you'd give to anyone that's, you know, on the fence of doing something like this or is preparing now or it's something in the future? I'm definitely one of those people. Like, this is something that I've always wanted to do. And funny enough, the day that I got diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, at the time I was living in Costa Rica. And that day I was supposed to do a huge hike that would have taken 2 days in Costa Rica. I had been training for it also. So, you know, I'm doing all this training. I'm thinking like, oh, I'm so thirsty because I'm working out so much. I'm losing all this weight because I'm working out so much, right? You're like thinking that way. And then I never got to do that hike. So that was like the only time where I was really preparing for something like that. So I definitely now, you know, now I'm diagnosed. I've had diabetes for also like 7 years. It'll be 8 in a few weeks. But something on my list, on my bucket list. And it was really just inspiring to hear your experience, what it was like. So any other moments or advice? Like, we're all ears, all of us listening.
I think something that was helpful for me in getting ready was just to make it part of every part of my life in terms of the training and the thinking about it. For me, for accountability, that was really important. And for example, my teammates at work were amazing. We made up a calendar. We would like take breaks and, you know, we would plank and we'd wall sit and we do all kinds of like walk stairs. Sometimes folks would walk stairs with me as I had my pack on and was doing all of that. I really, because, you know, we're humans with full lives and lots of commitments, I think I really had to be creative about integrating training opportunities into every facet of the day. And so that was helpful, but really it was the support of the network of humans, whether coworkers, family, friends. You know, my parents were so cute when we go visit them. They'd be looking up routes that we could go for long walks. And they'd be like, the route has a big hill. You know, if folks are on side and on board and excited with you and willing to help, what a gift. I found that really, it's just such a lovely way to love somebody and to demonstrate care. And I felt that in abundance in getting ready. But it required, you know, just putting it out there to say, I'm trying to do this thing and I need help. I can't do it by myself. And folks were really awesome at taking up the opportunity to be of support. I think I'm excited, Val. I think you should totally go for it. You know, again, I'm a human who I don't come to the experience with all this knowledge and background in it. And so I think it's important to not self-select out of an opportunity just because, you know, you haven't had the opportunity or been able to do the thing before. You know, when I was joking about couch to mountain, it really was couch to mountain. And even if you live in a place that's unlike where you're going, I think you can never approximate entirely what will happen or set things up exactly the way they're going to be. Even if you lived in that place, they'd still be different. The weather would be different, you know, stuff would change. So I think just bringing that mindset and, you know, being consistent, I think was really helpful. Just building over time and not trying to stack too much all at once and feeling, you know, overwhelmed about the fundraising that needed to happen, the logistics that needed to happen, the, you know, training, the, you know, the physical preparedness, the mental preparedness to do something. And then also to just take time while there to enjoy it. It goes quickly. So it felt really important to not rush and, you know, to take time to look back, to look forward, to look sideways. You know, it sounds weird, but when you're on the trail, the temptation is so high because it's set out before you to just keep looking forward. So to take time to do that 360 and take it all in, this something that one of the guides supported us to do was to, on the last day, do a silent hike part of the hike for, well, however long. We said sort of at least half an hour. I think it ended up being close to an hour. And it's actually one of my favorite parts of the experience, to be able to, you know, smell the air and listen to the sounds of our feet and just that sensory experience. You know, it's fun. It's super fun, you know, like to talk and laugh and do all the things. And it was an entirely different experience to just be in the quiet and the fullness of the experience from that perspective. So I would definitely recommend just even for 5 minutes or 20 minutes when out and about to do something like that. Because it really, I don't know, for me, it made a difference. I don't know if it would for other folks, but it was a really valuable insight.
Yeah. Taking that mindful moment. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Really, like, see, I love that. The 360 approach of like, you're so right. I think with everything we do, right, it's so easy to just kind of get into that linear way of seeing something and kind of just looking forward all the time. But that's such a beautiful way you put it. And definitely putting that in my toolkit. I'm so inspired. I was like, I'm about to like look up. I was having all these ideas. I was like, oh, does anyone want to do something like this with me? I think it's just such a, it's such a fun way to jump outside of your comfort zone, but also feel strong and also feel connected to earth. And I think that's something I really cherish. And I love to be outside. So to be able to really be outside and with nature and with the sounds and with people that you love, you know, that you love or you enjoy being around and the animals, I think nothing better. I was like, I love it. I'm so inspired. I think, you know, hearing you share all of the pieces from just preparing, but also sharing that, hey, like you can do things like this if you don't have that like 5-year experience or 10-year experience. It's just like getting started and taking it really like day to day. Because you're right, it can get so overwhelming, right? When you think about everything and just like in our management, right? Like there are so many variables. And if you look at it that way every single day, that's where it does start to feel heavy and it feels overwhelming because you're navigating so many moving parts. But if you can take it like one day at a time, one variable at a time, it definitely gives more space to be present and really enjoy. So I love that. We appreciate you sharing. I just love your energy and it's just so inspiring and we appreciate you. I'm going to put in the show notes if you want to reach out. I'm also going to put Connected in Motion if this is something that anyone listening is interested in learning more about. Connected in Motion is awesome. They have other opportunities if you're not ready to do something like to this extent, just even going to a slipstream and meeting more people in person and connecting with the community. So Mayor, again, thank you so much. And I look forward to just, if you ever have any other adventures that you want to share, big or small, like we're celebrating you and we appreciate you.
Thanks so much, Val. It's just such a joy and a gift to be connected. I'm so grateful for the opportunity to, you know, connect and share and also hear about your experiences and hopes. And, you know, I think, as you said, what was really resonating with me just now is for folks to, you know, you don't have to take on a 5-day backcountry trip. It doesn't have to look like that. There's so many ways to get out and be outside and be in the company of other RAD type 1 humans. Some facilitated through Connected in Motion or through Connections Made. There are lots of other ways. But if it's something that's your jam or you're not sure if it's your jam or you're curious, I always like to get curious and the knowing is in the doing. And I think, you know, you can't know it, you know, the experience until you actually are in it. That's what it, you can think about it. You can anticipate, but the reality is it shows up the way it does. And so I think just feeling, you know, to give yourself the opportunity to do that and find out what happens and learn how creative and clever and awesome and strong and resourced you are and the amazing humans that surround you are in the process.
Yeah, totally. I love it. Yeah. Your challenge. Yeah. Or your adventure could literally be going on a hike tomorrow. Right. And like just going to a new place you've never been. So beautiful. Love it. Thank you so much, Mayor.
Thanks.
Yeah. We'll chat soon. Thank you.
Sounds good. Good to see you.
Good to see you too. Bye. Bye.